A polluted report.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. We begin with an alarming statistic from China. Researchers have found that every year, 750,000 Chinese die prematurely from pollution. 750,000 people a year. But this information was left out of a new World Bank report on pollution in China. Our correspondent Scott Tong joins us from Shanghai. Scott, how on earth could that not be included?
The Beijing Olympic Committee is really sensitive about the issue of air quality.
Mm-hmm.
And they're concerned about any issues that are seen as destabilizing society in China. So you take those, put them together, and according to the Financial Times, they leaned on the World Bank to take out these mortality figures.
But I would think that if these numbers are accurate, they have much bigger problems than a PR situation before the Olympics. Are they arguing that the numbers aren't accurate?
One participant in this research study questioned the methodology, that it was unreliable. This person also said that we did not want to make this report too thick.
And what does the World Bank say about this?
The World Bank in a statement today said that what is public now is a discussion version of a full report that's going to come out at a later date. And some of the issues are still under discussion.
Scott, you live in China. How do you react to hearing this report?
You don't see a blue sky very often in Shanghai, I can tell you that, and it's not fog. There's just a lot of industrial development in a lot of China. Beijing adds 1,000 new cars on the roads per day. Now, we do have to say that pollution is an issue that's not just a China issue. I mean, these particles don't just stop at the border, right? They've been known to have floated all the way over to the Western United States and Western North America.
All right, Scott Tong, our correspondent in Shanghai. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, Scott.
Here in the States, car sales numbers for June come out today. Those figures might take a back seat to what's going on with the union. The United Auto Workers struck a deal with parts maker Delphi last week. Now the UAW will try to work things out with Ford, GM, and Chrysler. Lisa Roth reports.
The union whittled down the pay cuts Delphi wanted for its workers, but the cuts are still deep enough that some worry the big three will have to follow along.
The UAW is going to be at great pains to argue that Delphi is not a template for what should happen in Detroit this summer and early fall.
Harley Shaken studies labor relations at UC Berkeley. He says both sides will have to compromise, but there's no reason to believe workers at the big three will be forced to follow Delphi's example either.
It'd be a mistake to read Delphi as sort of a prototype or a prelude to the Detroit negotiations. Delphi's in bankruptcy. It's in the auto parts sector. It's in a very different set of circumstances than the Detroit Three.
Still, the issues are similar. High wages, expensive health care, and other benefits are blunting the U.S. auto industry's competitive edge. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Duke University's Fuqua School of Business Executive MBA programs, where working professionals earn Duke MBAs from locations around the world. Online at DukeExecutiveMBA.com.
What's all the hammering for? Oh, that's right. It's our series Nuts and Bolts. We've been talking to listeners about the joys and frustrations of building a small business. Let's say your business is doing well, so well that you need help. Time to put out that help wanted sign. Here's Steve Tripoli from our entrepreneurship desk.
So this is the master suite with the retreat.
Rocky housing market and all, Rachel Carter loves being a real estate developer on California's North Coast. She handles the design work and enjoys showing her properties.
I do all the surfaces and the color choices. That's really my love.
When things got busy for Carter and her partners, everyday office work started piling up. Hiring help solved that problem and let Carter do more of what she likes. But she admits that having someone else depend on her success adds a layer of unease.
I felt like all of a sudden I had the responsibility of another person who was paying their bills from my paycheck.
In Alpharetta, Georgia, listener Thomas Orff says adding staff adds other discomforts. His business cleans and repairs fine rugs, and he's had lots of frustration trying to get workers who do it to his standards. That's not the only problem.
Just the amount of paperwork and Social Security tax filings, and employees complicate that.
But a third listener says you've got to remember the upside of employees. Mike Van Horn's small business in San Rafael, California, is advising small businesses. He says you can't grow without employees, first of all, and they free you for vacations, the chores you enjoy, and even illness. The problem Van Horn often sees is business owners blindsided by a need for workers who then make bad decisions.
They hire somebody without adequately considering whether it's a good fit, and then it's not a good fit. And so then they think, oh, I can't get any good help, so it just proves that I should have stayed doing it all myself to start with.
But that doesn't get you anywhere. So Van Horn says many entrepreneurs should get help getting help. Hire someone who knows how to find workers who fit your business. Our Babson College small business expert, Patty Green, says entrepreneurs have three things to consider when contemplating that first hire. She says Rachel Carter, the real estate developer, is right. The first thing is that being responsible for someone else's livelihood really does change things.
Secondly, how you use your own time has to change, because this person has to learn about you, about the venture. And the third is, it's a different skill set.
Different because you have to weigh other people's needs, how their talents fit in, and because now you have to constantly remember that your own example is setting the company's culture. Thomas Orff in Georgia says that even in his specialty business handling fine rugs, he's learned to loosen his grip on workers.
I think the expectations are what need to be controlled in hiring people. You cannot expect them to be little mini-me's. That's ultimately the bottom line.
So that fateful first hiring decision comes down to two common decisions for business owners. Know what you want out of your business and figure out how to get there, preferably before the need comes crashing down on your head. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Lots more nuts and bolts on the web at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.